Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Talk radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk of Radio. It is, of course, the world headquarters of Common Sense, but you did know that, didn't you? I've got one question for you all this morning, and I want you to give it quite a lot of thought before you answer it and before you let me know what you think the answer to the question actually is. And here is the question. What on earth are they up to? And you know, when I say they, who I mean. What are they doing? What are they up to? What's going on? Yesterday afternoon, the Health Secretary, Sajid Javid, gave his first press conference to the nation in months, right? And it was expected to be the first sign of a government preparing to put the country back into COVID restrictions before he took to the podium in 10 Downing Street. There was all kinds of rumours of lockdowns coming, you know, mask wearing being brought back, social distancing being reintroduced, telling people to go work from home. But as the hour-long briefing went on, it was clear that it was more of a warning shot and a nudge than it was anything else. He said COVID cases could reach 100,000 a day. Maybe. He said with hospital admissions going back to 1,000 a day. Possibly. Just like last January. He said the NHS was under huge pressure. His words. In short, it was the same old massaging of the figures to frighten everyone into believing things will get worse if we don't change what we're doing. The bottom line, though, was a plea for people to get booster jabs, which they're currently not doing in very big numbers, and a suggestion that we should all wear masks to stop the rise in infections. Quite how that is going to work is not actually very clear, because with the NHS Confederation warning from yesterday in the background, Tony Blair has now joined in with his suggestion that we should all wear masks again. Well, why? No one from the government wears them in the House of Commons. They certainly weren't wearing them at their party conference, and he, Sajid Javid, wasn't wearing one yesterday. He's calling for a blitz spirit, right? I don't remember people walking around keeping distances from each other during the Blitz. I don't remember people wearing masks during the Blitz either. Or working from home, quite frankly. We'd never have won the war if we did that. We'll be talking to Paul Bristow MP first up this morning, who accused the NHS yesterday of trying to bounce the government into more COVID restrictions. And of course, he's right, isn't he? 0344 499 1000. Jamie Jenkins, our favourite statistician, is here as well, running the line over the COVID figures, as revealed by the Secretary of State yesterday. And Kate Ferguson from The Sun will tell us all about the briefing that she was at and what's being said behind the scenes, because that's going to be key for me as to what the government is actually trying to do. As ever, of course, we need to hear from you. This morning, we are told to go ahead and book Christmas parties as long as people get the booster. That was, of course, from the Health Minister. Well, that's all right. Let us know what you're doing, what you're hearing, and what you're seeing as well. We bring you the shortage of the day as well. So if you've spotted anything we're told is going to run out, do let us know. 0344 499 1000. Author Helen Dale joins us too with her take on the difference between hate speech on social media and violent physical attacks and terrorist incidents. And employment law expert Christian Lay will explain why the shortage of HGV drivers has nothing to do with Brexit and everything to do with HMRC and a change in tax status. And because it's Thursday, of course it's time for the Thursday Club. Our chance to introduce you to some fine wines today in the company of Rebecca Palmer from Corney and Barrow. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, let us, without further ado, say a very good morning to Paul Bristow, Conservative MP for Peterborough, member of the Health and Social Care Select Committee as well. Paul, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. I was sort of drawn to your comments yesterday after the NHS Confederation came out and said that, we should start taking more precautions, we should start wearing masks. I mean, and I looked into the NHS Confederation yesterday and found some rather interesting facts, i.e. they don't seem to do an awful lot that has much to do with medicine. They're run by a former Tony Blair advisor called Matthew Taylor, who makes about £250,000 a year. And quite what business it is of theirs to tell people how to behave. It's quite remarkable.
Well, I agree with you, Mike. They're straying away from what the NHS should be doing, or the NHS Confed should be doing. And the BMA were the same this morning. And they're trying to dictate social policy. I nearly choked on my fried egg this morning when I heard that the BMA had now joined in this chorus that we should be restricting, we should be locking down. The Health Minister, Ed Argar, this morning on another radio station was saying that this is a sort of race between the vaccine and COVID. And we're still winning that race. We're going to need our NHS. We're going to need the BMA. We're going to need the NHS Confed probably in order to win this race. And they should be helping us win this race instead of trying to bounce us into more restrictions and more lockdowns. And quite frankly, bounce us into restricting our liberties.
Yes, because my question at the top of the show today was, what are they up to? And by they, I mean the government. Sajid Javid yesterday, we all thought was going to come out with something slightly more draconian than he did. And we were sort of watching it slightly in disbelief, wondering when, you know, the other shoe was going to drop, because he didn't really say anything particularly dramatic. He didn't really warn about anything that was going on that was worrying. But he kind of said, well, just all get your jabs and your boosters and we'll all be fine. So I was kind of thinking to myself, what is it they want us to do? What is it they're trying to give us that they're not quite telling us about?
Wouldn't it be refreshing if the BMA this morning, instead of trying to tell us that we should be locking down or we should be restricting, actually joined that push for asking people to go out and get that booster jab? Because we don't want to go back to lockdown. And the other thing that's extraordinary, Mike, is that they're calling for all this lockdown after having the biggest increase in NHS spending ever. What they're not answering the question is, how are we going to pay for new lockdowns, new restrictions, new furlough schemes, new job protection schemes? Are they wanting to divert money that we've allocated to the NHS to that? Or do they want to raise more taxes? They're not mentioning that, are they, Mike?
Well, that's the trouble. And I mean, you know, as far as I know, the NHS Confederation, for example, is supposed to be about, you know, helping leadership skills and helping, you know, organisations within the NHS to perform better, you know, which we clearly know is not happening. So maybe they'd be better putting their sort of efforts into trying to improve the services that the NHS is currently running and failing at, for example, in the business of GP surgeries, which is still not working as well as they should be, instead of telling everybody, you know, what they should be doing and what masks they should be wearing. And also, by the way, this whole mask debate, Tony Blair apparently this morning has now come on and said we should be wearing masks. You know, masks have been pretty well discredited as any kind of form of stopping the virus anyway, unless you're wearing some kind of surgical mask that is sort of, you know, weapons grade for use in surgery only.
Well, I think on masks, it's still down to personal responsibility. And that's still the advice. And that's still the advice that lots of people take. But unfortunately, for organisations like the NHS Confed and the BMA, there are those who are actually looking at statistics. And my colleague, Mark Harper, yesterday pointed out very, very helpfully that there are fewer people in hospital now with COVID than there was 8 months ago, and that this spike in infection is largely amongst the young. And we all know that the young and those at school are much less likely to have a severe reaction to COVID than anyone else. It just seems to me that the NHS Confed, like you said, and the BMA are far too interested in talking about social policy when they should be far more interested on focusing on encouraging people to get the jab and improving the way the NHS works.
Exactly right. And it has become now a sort of totally split political scenario, hasn't it? You know, where you've got the likes of Matthew Taylor and Tony Blair and the BMA, which is effectively a union. I actually had a tweet from somebody yesterday saying why we should be able to mandate that any union organisation has to have the word union in its title, because the BMA kind of pretends it's not really a union, but it actually is. And these people are the ones calling for lockdowns. They all seem to work in the public sector. They don't seem to care about the finances of the country or how the economy is going to be able to deal with it, as you say. And yet, here's Sajid Javid saying, wear a mask inside. But nobody on the Tory benches wears a mask anymore, really. You see very odd occasional ones being worn, but basically nobody wears them inside the House of Commons, which is not, as far as I know, one of the best ventilated buildings in the entire world.
Well, I think the House of Commons still has plenty of restrictions, actually, believe it or not, in terms of the people you can bring in and out of the House of Commons. I think it's one of the few places which still have a degree of restriction placed over it. But you're absolutely right, the point you made earlier about the BMA and the NHS Confed. I look at a city like Peterborough, a working city, where, quite frankly, Mike, people need to go out to work in order to eat. And if we're kind of, and not many people had a happy lockdown. You know, they don't have big houses and nice gardens and all the rest of it. And telling people, the British people, that we need to go back to that, when the data suggests that we shouldn't go back to that, quite frankly, is worrying. They don't need to get involved in this sort of debate and this 24-hour politics. They need to get on and help us get through this pandemic.
Yes, exactly right. And we're told this morning, as you say, by the Health Minister, that we should go ahead and book our Christmas parties without fear or favour, as long as we get our booster jabs. Now, is this all about trying to persuade more people to get a booster jab? And if that is the case, why don't they just say so?
Well, I think getting the booster jabs got to be our focus. I saw a lot of the newspapers today are all about, you know, kind of jabs army again and that spirit, we need to get out there. I think that's absolutely right. I think a lot of people, to be fair, probably thought once they've been double jabbed, you know, that was kind of it and the challenge was over. Look, the British people have done what the government have asked them to do. They endured lockdown, they've gone and got their jabs, they've endured, you know, really, really tough measures against their own personal liberties and personal freedoms. This one last go out and get your booster jab, I think, is perfectly sensible. But new lockdowns, new restrictions, that should be the very last thing we do.
Yeah, but the trouble with all that, Paul, though, is that we've had that one last thing to do for about 18 months, haven't we? I mean, I tell people from the beginning, when I walked out of the pub across the street back in March of last year, I said to myself, well, I suppose we can manage it for 3 weeks, which is what everybody thought was going to happen. Now, I know that events, it can't necessarily be predicted, but you know, there's been an awful lot of that. It's just one more thing, you know, to save Christmas, or one more thing to save Easter, you know, one more thing to save the NHS, and we'll all be fine. And we're still not fine.
No, I understand that. But if you look at the data, actually, Mike, you look at the data, things aren't as bad as people are painting. As I said, we've got fewer people in hospital with COVID than we had a month ago. The infection.
Well, Sajid Javid didn't say that yesterday, did he?
Well, no, but I think this is all about trying to encourage. I don't disagree with you about encourage people to get the over 50s and those who are vulnerable to get that booster jab. I think that's perfectly sensible, to be honest, and, you know, protecting those people in that way. Mm. But this shouldn't be about restricting our personal liberties anymore. I'm completely with you on that, mate.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Because also, I mean, Julie Hartley-Brew and I were talking about this, that, you know, I'm not sure that you would get the compliance levels that you got before. I mean, yes, there will be some people who will go along with it, and those are probably the people who are still currently working from home, but an awful lot of people who are now back, you know, I was on the tube this morning in London, absolutely rammed with people, loads of people going to work, loads of people quite happy to go either with a mask or without a mask, even though they're now saying on the underground you must wear a mask, which actually isn't true. But there's too many people who are now back at work. I don't think they would take going back home again.
I think the British people have been marvellous throughout this entire thing. They've gone the extra mile, and I just don't think we can at this stage. Every change in data, every change in metric, every change in spike, we should be listening to people like the BMA and the NHS Confed saying we should lock down, we should restrict anymore. I've got a lot of sympathy with the idea that we should learn to live with COVID. That's what the jab and the vaccine program was all about. Because if we do restrict and we don't learn to live with COVID, then we're going to close down the economy. That helps pay for our NHS, Mike. I mean, it's the taxes from hardworking people in cities like Peterborough that pay for our NHS. So let us get on there, open up the economy and pay those taxes.
But what I'd like to see, Paul, I know a lot of people who listen to this show would also like to see, I mean, you're on the Health and Social Care Select Committee, you know, what about a complete and utter reform of the NHS? Because the NHS is an incredibly wasteful organisation. And when I say this to people, they look at me as if I've committed some kind of heresy. You know, what do you mean? You know, I mean, a story today, thousands of pounds of taxpayers' cash is being spent on luxuries such as National Trust passes, football tickets and PlayStations for NHS patients, apparently to make them all feel better. Well, that's great. But I mean, you know, it's one thing to give people free healthcare. You don't have to give them a free PlayStation, do you?
Well, we've given all this extra money to the NHS. And for me, that extra money needs to be accompanied by, I think, efficiencies and improved productivity. I think we do that in three ways. I think first we need to see a huge reduction in management And I think that there should be a target for a reduction in management. In Peterborough, my local council shares its chief executive with Cambridgeshire County Council, but my local hospital doesn't share its chief executive with another neighbouring hospital. It's got the same HR manager, the same estates manager. This all amounts to lots and lots of money, and we need to be saving money on management. We need to be saving money on procedures. You know, we spend lots of money on NICE and getting it right first time to come up with the right ways of doing things. But then routinely, NHS trusts across the country ignore that, which is not right at all. And we need to be saving money on clinician time as well. Why are GPs still spending time prescribing the pill? Why are senior clinicians wasting their time doing procedures that nurses or physician associates should do? We need targets on saving clinicians' time. Operate at the top of your speciality, not at the bottom.
Absolutely right. And we had a caller yesterday who actually was a former NHS executive who said that he looked at the budget on Companies House for the NHS Confederation, £15 or £16 million a year, which he worked out you could get you 500 nurses and about 12 to 15 consultant surgeons.
Well, there you go. And they won't tell you exactly how we should pay for these economic restrictions and these lockdowns and these furlough schemes. They'll just ask for more money. This extra money from the NHS needs to come with significant reform. I'm so pleased the government have actually appointed, I think, an army general to look into how we do this. I've got lots of suggestions for them, Mike. I'm sure you do too.
Yes.
And we need to feed them in.
Absolutely right. Well, stay where you are, Paul, because we'll get some ways of doing that. So we're talking to Paul Bristow. We're going to have a short break here at Talk Radio. He's Conservative MP for Peterborough. If you've got something you want to tell him about, by all means, tell me, and I will pass it on.
This is Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB+, and on the Talk Radio app. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. The Home of Common Sense, Paul Bristow's here with us, a Conservative MP for Peterborough. He's also a member of the Health and Social Care Select Committee. Paul, let me read you this tweet that I've got from somebody calling themselves Teacher. I've just been for a knee x-ray, three people in reception, two radiologists and five other nurses and health professionals hanging around doing nothing. I was the only one there. We're told the NHS is struggling. Could it be anything to do with bad and wasteful management? I get a lot of this every single day. People, when they go to use the NHS right now, particularly in GP surgeries or in these kind of settings, there's no patients around.
Well, for years, local councils have been forced to share their senior management with neighbouring councils to save money. Our NHS hasn't had to do that. And I think this money, this extra money we put in, should only come with the proviso they've got to do that. The other point I kind of raised earlier, we set up this big thing called Getting It Right First Time, GERFT. And that was a big national effort led by Tim Brings to look at the way we do procedures. And it was supposed to improve outcomes and save money. And he did this extensive work on all sorts of different things. And unfortunately, only some NHS trusts then went and adopted his guidance. There are plenty of NHS trusts who haven't adopted his guidance, saying things like, it doesn't work here, or it's not been invented here, we've got an alternative system. But why spend all that money and appoint those people with that experience to look into these things and then not adopt his findings? I think that's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely right. And there's all sorts of opportunities to do that. And this is what I mean by having a proper kind of conversation about the reform of parts of the NHS that aren't working properly. Because in this day and age, we've got no excuses, really, to not be more efficient. But it seems to me an awful lot of it is run as if we're still in the 1970s.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, one of the comments that came to me on the Health Select Committee is that we had during lockdown 3 years worth of innovation over 3 months. And a lot of that was forced upon the NHS, you know, things like Zoom for outpatient appointments and things like that. But, you know, innovation is not just about replacing GP appointments, you know, via Zoom, GP face-to-face appointments via Zoom. It's about doing things differently. It's also making sure that our clinicians operate at the top of their profession. You know, we want surgeons basically in the cath lab operating on people. We don't want to hear any more stories about surgeons only spending one day a week in the cath lab. They need to be there performing these procedures and getting us through this. We also don't want GPs focusing 40% of their time, and this is why I've got a bit of sympathy with them, 40% of their time doing fitness notes or releasing medical records. If the government can improve and legislate to save them all this kind of unnecessary bureaucracy, then that allows them to then go and see patients face-to-face and do the things that they're being paid for, quite frankly.
Absolutely. Just off on a different subject, really, Paul, the terrible events of last Friday resulting in the murder of Tory MP Sir David Amis have obviously shocked the world, really, probably shocked you guys inside Parliament more than anything. What's your view on sort of the whole debate around safety for MPs and you know, constituency surgeries and that kind of thing?
Well, I knew Sir David Amis for 20 years, and, you know, that attack really did hit home, because just before I got the news of that attack, I was doing my own constituency surgery. I'm not trying to make this about me in any way,
no.
But it does kind of make you feel, you know, slightly vulnerable. But to be honest, I live in Peterborough. You know, this is my city. This is where I go shopping, where I go to the pub, where I go to the restaurant. Am I going to have a burly minder every time I pop down, you know, the Dog and Duck for a pint? I mean, that's just not practical.
No.
I think there's certain things you can do, you know, about making sure people register before surgery appointments. But even on that, I'm doing a surgery a week on Friday in Asda. And part of the reason I want to do these surgeries, just as well as helping people, is also to be seen to be visible and for people to see me as approachable. And I think the best way, actually, Mike, to honour Sir David is to follow his example. He was a hard-working, visible MP, and that's what I want to be.
Yes, and the other big story coming up next week, I guess, is the Rishi Sunak awesome statement. Obviously, a lot of people are very worried about tax rises, and the Tories keep telling us that they don't like putting taxes up, but they still keep doing it. You know, what faith can we have in the future for this government if all they're going to do is keep asking for more and more money off us?
Well, look, it's no surprise to you, Mike, that I'm very much a low-tax Conservative. That's one of the reasons I joined the Conservative Party, because I instinctively believe that people know best how to spend their own money. That's what makes me a Conservative. And so that's when the Chancellor was looking for ideas and the spending review, my idea was very much what we're talking about today. You know, putting some KPIs against this extra money that we're giving to the NHS. Otherwise, it's just going to go to the block, quite frankly, and be spent on, you know, that middle of management. And that is not a Conservative way of doing things.
No, absolutely right. Well, listen, Paul, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. We might be down in the tent of Common Sense on Wednesday, so come and pay us a visit over at College Green if you're around. It would be good to see you again. Paul Bristow, Conservative MP for Peterborough, member of the Health and Social Care Select Committee. You know, the reform of the NHS is long overdue. No question about it. I'd like to hear your stories today.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Jamie Jenkins is here with us, our favourite statistician, formerly, of course, from the ONS, political commentator as well. Jamie, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. I think watching the government briefing in the pub is probably the best place to be, I think, watching it yesterday.
I kept waiting for something interesting to happen, and it sort of just didn't, you know. I was sitting with a couple of guys from work, and I said, when's this going to get, you know, when's he going to say anything that actually means anything? It didn't, there was nothing really in it at all. It was literally the most boring and dull series of statistics rolled out, I think, that I've ever seen, and it's got some pretty stiff competition.
No, I think so, Mike. Normally when they call these press conferences is to make an announcement. I'm not sure if this was to kind of rebut a lot of the media, and then you've got kind of the people who are for these kind of lockdowns calling for Plan B. So why don't we just start with Plan B, Mike?
Yeah.
Because obviously Plan B is vaccine passports, working from home, mandatory masks. Now, I live over the border in Wales. We've got practically all three of those. We've got slightly different to the vaccine passports where you've got vaccine passes where you can kind of show a lateral flow test that is negative. But ultimately, Wales has Plan B.
Mm.
Wales has higher cases than England. Cases are slightly rising in Wales over the last few weeks. So I think all these people are saying, let's get Plan B in England. I don't think it's going to have a significant impact, Mike, in terms of when you look at the data from Wales.
No. Well, the one piece of data that I didn't hear yesterday from Sajid Javid, I heard this morning from Paul Bristow MP, and I don't know if you were able to hear what he said, but which is that the number of deaths is so much lower right now than it was back in January, that the number of people in hospital or the increases in the number of infections is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, so let's talk through the numbers then, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's look at the hospital figures to start with. So we currently have about 6,300 patients in beds in England with COVID.
Right.
Now, at its peak in January, it was over 34,000. You know, you're talking 6,000 versus 34,000,
yeah. So
less than a fifth of the total.
More, yeah.
Yeah, less than a fifth of the total. Now, remember as well, now NHS England have started publishing some information that's been called for, which is looking at how many patients are in hospital, test positive, but not in for COVID. And about a quarter of those patients, those 6,000, are in hospital, not for COVID, but they've tested positive because obviously it's spreading through the community. So we've got about 4,500 patients overall. Now, patients in mechanical ventilated beds, they're the more serious ones. Again, we've got 746 of those at the moment. It's less than a fifth of the peak that we had. And I think the more important figure we need to focus on, Mike, really, in terms of is the NHS going to be overrun, is that if we just look at the latest data that we had a week ago, we've got 88,000 beds in the NHS overall. We've got 4.7% of them had COVID patients in, 89.6% of them had non-COVID patients in, but we had more empty beds in the NHS last week than we had the whole number of COVID
Really?
patients. Yeah, so you know,
See,
these are the
this is why
things
we
we
get
don't
you on,
get
Jamie,
talked
because
about.
you're the guy that tells us what's really going on. And why don't we hear any of this from the government?
Well, I think part of it, Mike, is because this is all this kind of the scaremongering. They're worried now that we have seen a rise in cases over the last couple of weeks, but they're still below kind of July's peak.
Well, yeah, but
People in
let's
half.
forget about the cases word. Let's say we've had a rise in the number of people testing positive, shall we?
But that's true, Mike, actually. Yeah, we've got, and a good thing, I suppose, with regards to looking at the positivity in terms of the numbers is the vaccine clearly does have an effect. I think the UK would get more out of the booster vaccines for kind of the vulnerable people, because we have seen now that nearly half of over 80s in England have had a booster vaccine. The evidence from Israel, Mike, is that the booster does help with these, especially among the vulnerable people. And we've seen the cases that have been rising in older people, kind of the increase in cases has kind of slowed down. So I think you're going to get more from the booster rollout for vulnerable people. I'm not saying to vaccinate the whole population again,
No.
but for the vulnerable people, because remember, Mike, we still know that over 82% of all the deaths in the UK are people over the age of 70. And a figure that gets talked about, I think that's why the UK now is on some banned list for some foreign countries again, is that we're getting all these cases in the UK now compared to Europe, but we test far more than the rest of
Right.
Europe. So
Well,
makes the
that's
UK
my
look
worry,
really
right?
bad.
Because my sort of nightmare scenario is thanks to this ridiculous testing regime, you know, we will once again become the sort of plague nation. And places like United States of America, where I'm planning to go and see my mother, are going to say, you can't come.
I think exactly that, Mike. And if you actually look at the death figures, Mike, just for some context, the UK is currently running about the same as the EU level. We look like we're really bad compared to the EU because we're testing loads more, but the number of deaths aren't the thing. So I think, Mike, when you look at the figures overall, yeah, let's not just focus on cases. Let's look at deaths. Deaths are considerably lower, about 90% lower than what they would be. I think some people have forgotten in the NHS, or the people who are calling for all of these extra restrictions, is this time last year, things did get pretty bleak. Cases did rise around this time last year, but we didn't have a vaccine. We were told, let's have the vaccine rollout. The vaccine clearly does have an effect. You know, they pushed vaccines out to children. I know there's been a low uptake from that. I don't think we need to be vaccinating the children. We've got the booster vaccines. You know, you can't keep saying vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. And Mike, this is an important figure, I suppose, is that why are we in this position? Well, we give 150 billion a year to the NHS. We've given an extra 62 billion in the last year for COVID, but we still ended up in a position, Mike, where there's about 246 beds for every 1,000 people, sorry, for every 100,000 people in the UK. And it's over 800 in Germany and over nearly 600 in France. So we're giving all this money to the NHS, but we're still in a bleak position compared to these countries. So
Yeah, but
I
from
think
what
you've
you're
been calling for
saying,
this.
we've got a load of empty beds right now, so we don't really need any more beds, do we? We just need a better run NHS. I mean, that's what we need. Because one of the reasons where they were worried the beds were going to run out, which they never did, by the way, is that they took a third of them out for social distancing.
Yeah, and that, again, that's another issue, Mike, isn't it? Taking these kind of beds. So we've got fewer beds now than we had at the start of the pandemic, in particular because of all of that. But I think, obviously, you've done your calls. Germany moved away from saying that, looking at cases several months back now, Mike, to say we're going to look at the impact on our hospitals. And the chances of the impact on Germany is going to be pretty low because they've got a lot more beds. But you're right, we've got empty beds at the moment. I think people are concerned that, you know, if we do get 100,000 cases a day, the NHS won't be able to cope. But I think again, Mike, that's where the vaccine comes in, because say we did hit 100,000 cases a day, and if you just look at the number of admissions now in relation to cases, well, we probably have about 1,700 admissions a day. And again, that's below the peak of
Yeah.
winter. And we managed to survive last winter. I think the biggest issue, Mike, we've talked about it previously, is you know, if you go back 2018, 17, 16, 15, 14, every year, media, newspapers, they're always front of the Guardian, the NHS is overwhelmed, yeah. kind of cope. That is the biggest
problem. Yeah, I mean, that's what we get every... I'm sick to death of hearing it, you know, because it wasn't overwhelmed last year. And if it wasn't overwhelmed last year, it never will be, right? So it has the capacity. It has perfectly capable needs to be filled. There's nothing that we need to give them extra. And all we have to do is make sure that they run the organisation properly. It's really that simple, isn't it?
No, I exactly that, Mike. I think, you know, a root and branch review of the NHS. I think, you know, the MP on just now was talking about looking at the structure of the management in the NHS. It must be, you know, clearly bureaucracy going mad with regards to the budget. You know, it's a huge amount of money going into this, Mike. And it's not just the kind of the hospital side of things. We've talked about the GP side of things. I think the important thing to remember, all those people calling for Plan B, if we did implement Plan B, they won't be happy with that. They'd be calling for Plan C, D, E.
But also just get the very last thing we need to do is get the booster jab. You know, well, really? Are you sure? Because if that's the case, and they reckon that these vaccines have a shelf life, then presumably in sort of, I don't know, April or May, they're going to say, get another booster.
No, we can't keep kind of jabbing people forever, Mike, with regards to all this. If you're vulnerable, you know, getting the vaccine clearly is the way forward. You know, and the flu vaccine, the death rate from COVID is looking similar to the flu now, and we don't force the flu vaccine on everybody. I think ultimately, Mike, you know, some people will never be happy until we've got kind of lockdowns back in. We've had the vaccine rollout, very successful. Get the booster if you know if you're vulnerable, and in regards to all of that, let's not just look about cases, let's look at the hospitalizations and deaths. And things aren't as bad as what being painted by many of the national media outlets. And you know, Mike,
this
as soon as the questions come up, no, and as soon as the questions come to the Sajid Javid yesterday, you know, the journalists in the room are all kind of saying, well, why aren't we going to go into lockdown? The same things it happens in Wales, Mike. As soon as we have the next briefing, they'll be saying to Mark Drakeford, why aren't you locking down? You know, I think the important thing here is the data showing that the vaccine's clearly having an effect. Things aren't as bleak as what is being painted with the rest of Europe because we're testing a lot more. And we have got some capacity in the NHS.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing to be concerned about as far as I'm concerned. Jamie, great to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed. Jamie Jenkins, independent statistician there, giving us the real figures and the real reason why that we're not anywhere near having to have more restrictions or have any kind of lockdown, because quite frankly, there's no requirement for it. It's that simple. When are people going to get it into their thick heads that this is not a crisis anymore? 0344 499 1000. Mike says, why is COVID more important than cancer, heart disease and other terrible conditions? Why should we save the NHS when they should be saving us? Our political elites have failed us time and again with so many billions wasted. What next? Oh, the same again. Idiots. Exactly. This is Talk Radio.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now let us talk about the word love, because Angela Levin is here, our favourite royal biographer. Some lovely pictures this morning of Wills and Kate backstage at that sort of eco earth shot business that they did the other week, where they gave away loads of money to people who were being very congratulatory about the environment and doing things that were going to save the planet. And people were powering it all on bicycles and all sorts of things were going on. The Queen also yesterday cancelled a trip for the first time, I think, in a very long time to Northern Ireland because of ill health. Let's find out from Angela what it's all about. Angela, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us, as ever. Let's talk about the Queen, first of all. Lots of tributes to the Queen this morning in the papers, where people saying, please don't work so hard, Mom, because she really is. We're still working quite a lot for somebody of 95, isn't she?
Yes. I mean, we see her when she goes out, but she's actually working a lot within the palace because she's doing lots of Zoom things. And she also has a big red box with loads of paperwork that she has to go through.
Right.
So, you know, all these things are very taxing.
Sure.
I think that she should be encouraged to step back quite a bit now.
Mm.
She wants to be very well for the Platinum Jubilee next spring. And I think that she should relax more.
Yeah.
And I think it's very wrong of people to say, you know, she'll still be here in 10 years and 20 years, because I think that puts a lot of pressure on her and will make her sort of more active. I think it's a sort of mind versus body issue.
Where I wonder as well sometimes, Angela, whether because Prince Philip isn't around anymore to sort of tell her to not go quite so hard and not slow down a little bit, which I imagine he would have done. There's nobody really telling her that.
Nobody would tell her that. They don't dare to, really. They feel that she's got to make up her own mind and that she's done for decades. But with him, I think he would have actually said, now you're just going to rest.
Mm.
She's done 8 engagements in 13 days, which is quite a lot if you consider the travel.
Yeah.
And the effort of making conversation with people that you don't know, and to be polite and to ask the right questions.
Oh,
it is
so.
An awful lot.
Oh, it really is. And I guess it doesn't help matters that because the royal family is sort of slightly denuded now because Harry's not around and Andrew can't go and do anything. I mean, you know, they're sort of two down. Prince Philip's gone. You know, there's not many people that she can hand over the baton to, are there?
Well, she has handed over masses to Prince Charles and Camilla, and also to William and Catherine.
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot more for her.
Mm.
And you can tell when it's for her or when it's their own engagements, when they say representing the Queen. So it means they've taken over that job and another one. But they can only do so much. And we see them every day travelling and talking and being charming. It's not easy being a royal, actually, because everyone, you're always out for criticism when really you're working your socks off.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the pictures of the two of them are quite touching, aren't they?
Who?
Of William and Kate.
Yes, they're lovely, actually, and some of them are taken without them posing. It's just how they are naturally together. And they are totally at ease with each other. And I think that now William has lost a lot of the nervousness and spotness of being a royal. And he's now really a loving husband and he loves being a father. And that's really changed him. And I think a lot of that is thanks to picking the right wife who brings out the best in you.
Well,
and I think he's there to support him and actually make him feel good about what he's doing.
Yes, no, I think that's absolutely right.
You're laughing at me.
Well, I'm smiling because I know what's going to come next, because we are going to talk about the Harry and Meghan scenario, because there's a guy who clearly didn't perhaps choose the right woman for that kind of thing.
Yes.
And that's why I was smiling, because in the papers this morning, we are hearing that Meghan has written a letter to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who's quite a famous woman in her own right, and US Senator Chuck Schumer, who's the majority leader, because, of course, she couldn't just write a letter to any old politician. She'd have to write it to the two of the highest sort of members of the Democratic Party. And it's not any old letter. It's a 1,000-word letter about how she wants her family to be looked after by the government's policies on maternity leave. It's quite extraordinary.
Well, I think it's yet another shock from Meghan, which has got loads of publicity, which is obviously one aim of it.
Mm.
She's abused the royal, being a British royal or you know, working as a British royal, because she's actually trying to tell another government what to do.
Yeah.
The heading on the newspaper is the office of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex,
yes,
which is definitely an abuse. The other thing is she takes on different types. You know, she becomes a sort of young sort of guru,
yeah,
saying that she understands how these families feel. She's representing all the families. How does she know that? I mean, this is Meghan taking the global view again.
Yeah, I mean, most people who have children don't actually have two nannies, a couple of butlers, a driver, a security detail, a 16-bed...
And 16 bathrooms.
16-bathroom, 9-bedroom mansion in Montecito.
Yes. I mean, but she said she really sympathises because she and Harry were overwhelmed when they had Lily.
Of course they were.
No, they don't call her Lily Bet. I don't know anyone who's not overwhelmed by a child. I mean, it's right. very, very...
Yeah, but it, I mean, as I said, I mean, it is a little bit easier if you've got round-the-clock slaves to help you out.
Yes, but she's also trying to get a policy put through of parental leave, paying the government to pay parental leave, but it's already gone through, actually. The thing they haven't decided is how long each family can use it for. But she's sort of jumped on the bandwagon, as she often does, and so that she can claim it was my letter, what done it.
Yes.
But also the signature at the end. Well, this is a professional letter to senior politicians, and the signature is end by her. I said, also by Archie, Lily, and Harry. Their husband's put at the end, but surely Archie and Lily aren't yet involved in having parental leave.
Yes. It is remarkably sort of, and I mean, people will say to me, oh, you're always picking on Meghan. You know, well, not really. It's just remarkably self-absorbed. Everything she does is just ridiculously kind of focused on her, not really on anybody else. And that's what she wants, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what she wants. I mean, she's also pretending that when she was young, she didn't have any money and the most expensive restaurant she could go to was for $5.
$4.99, Sizzler salad bar. Yeah, well, you know, that's all right.
But her father was spending $28,000 a year for her to go to a school. She was very well looked after. Her mother didn't have to work after she had Meghan.
Yeah.
She was comfortably middle class. And here she is trying to pretend that she knows all about poverty. As you say, it's all about me, 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 me. And it's incredibly annoying.
It really is incredibly annoying. And that's why we always point it out, because, you know, and also she knows very well that Nancy Pelosi is of a similar kind of bent. And Nancy Pelosi loves a bit of publicity. So she'll love the idea that she's had the letter. And so no doubt the next step will be, why don't you come to Washington and we can have you address the Senate about the issue of childcare or some nonsense, right?
This is what she wants, of course. Yeah. I mean, she really does want to try being a politician, but she also wants to make films. She also wants to star in them. She also wants to tell people how to invest their money.
Yeah.
I mean, the list is becoming endless.
Write the theme tune, sing the theme tune, all that, you know. It's amazing.
And actually, nothing really gets done. You know, you dip in and dip out, because I think she's very, very restless.
Mm.
And she doesn't concentrate on one thing to try and make that go well.
Well, it seems as though she's sort of a gadfly-like, isn't she? She doesn't settle on anything for very long. Suddenly there's always something new to be done. You know, we've got a podcast over here. We've only done one. Let's go and do a series over there. Let's do another book over here. Let's write a letter to the Capitol building.
And write a book.
Yeah, write another book. You know, let's make another trip. You know, it's just, it's a kind of, I would suggest it's the actions of somebody who hasn't got enough to do.
Well, I think it's the actions of somebody who's desperate to be noticed.
Mm.
And she just has to be on the front pages. And she succeeds very well. We, you know, time after time, she shocks us so much that we put it on the front page, analyse it, tell her off, and then wait for the next blow.
Well, she's not. She's going to be disappointed today, because she's been beaten to the front page by both Wills and Kate and the Queen. And she's back on page 13, Daily Mail, I'm afraid. She'll note that down, I'm sure. Why isn't Robert Hardman writing about me? You know,
yeah,
amazing. Good stuff. Well, Angela, lovely to see you. Thank you very much indeed. Angela Levin, royal biographer there, on the vagaries of being part of the royal family or not. Indeed. And of course, the Queen is, I'm sure, going to be absolutely fine. But she does work an awful lot harder than she needs to, I think, at the age of 95, don't you?
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So there I was watching the Sajid Javid briefing in the pub, best place to be. Somebody said earlier, you know, if only that was one of those Carlsberg things, if they did press briefings, they'd say over to Mike Graham, who's now in the pub. But that's not how they do it. Instead, they use much more professional people like Kate Ferguson, deputy political editor at The Sun, who was at the briefing and who did actually ask a question. Kate, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, good to be with you.
Thank you very much indeed. I mean, it was an interesting thing. Am I right to say that I think it's the first proper briefing that Sajid Javid's done since before the summer, really?
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. We used to have these briefings every day in sort of lockdown one. I'm sure everyone remembers tuning in at 4 or 5pm, but this is the first one we had in quite a while. And actually, because of that, there was quite a lot to chew on and a lot for the government to say and a lot for us to ask them about.
Well, there was, because before he got to the stage, as I call it, you know, there was an awful lot of sort of rumour mill type stuff going around that this was going to be quite serious. It was going to be the announcement of some more restrictions and, you know, the numbers weren't looking very good. And, you know, it might be that he won't go all the way to saying there'll be a lockdown, but he might bring masks back or make a mandatory thing for that. But it wasn't really that intense, was it?
We've had this before, right? I mean, it's been a little while since COVID has been on the front pages and since we have these daily press conferences. So just to sort of remind your listeners where we are, the government have said plan A is to live as we currently live and everyone get the booster jabs. But they have this plan B up their sleeve. And plan B is basically back to masks, back to home working and vaccine passports. And so as those numbers creep up, Sajid yesterday talked about the possibility of 100,000 COVID cases a day. We're waiting to see, do they push the button on this plan B? That's the main thrust. But also, I think as we approach winter, people are starting to think, is there a plan C lurking behind somewhere? Could we see a return to those more draconian restrictions from last year? So as we head into winter, we're sort of feeling out where the government's going next. Right.
Exactly. Well, that was my question this morning at the top of the show, is what are they really up to? Because it's kind of slightly puzzling to me. I was speaking to one of our correspondents in Wales, Jamie Jenkins, who used to be with the ONS, and he was saying that Plan B basically is already in effect in Wales. And in fact, they've got higher numbers than we have.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's probably like different reasons for the way the virus sort of plays out in different parts of the country. But I suppose it's not a panacea, is it?
No. I mean, well, that's the thing. I suppose my point is that if they were to say, right, we're going to make you wear a mask again, we're going to make you social distance, we're going to make you work from home, there's no real evidence that that actually does anything.
Well, I think the scientists will say there is evidence that that does work. I guess the question becomes, does the public accept it, given that we do have the vaccine now? And also, can we make a success of Plan A without having to go to Plan B?
Yeah.
So I think there is genuinely a big push, a huge push by the government to, you know, encourage people to get the jab, really build on the boosters and hope that if you can really see those rates rocket and make sure that that you get a sort of wall of immunity, as they call it, with the vaccine, you don't have to revert to those more extreme measures.
Right.
Certainly, those measures are really unpopular among Tory MPs. They would be really, really loath to see them come in.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, we were speaking to one of them this morning who was very unhappy about the fact, Paul Bristow, very unhappy about the fact that the NHS is kind of trying to bounce the government into putting more restrictions on. And that appears to be what they're doing, because we heard from NHS, the NHS Confederation people yesterday, who are effectively not really a clinical body. You know, they're not a medical part of the NHS. They're run by a guy who used to work for Tony Blair. You know, so there's a lot of sort of politics going on here, isn't there?
That's totally true. I mean, today you've had the BMA say go to Plan B, it's negligent of you not to, but there's huge anger among Tory backbenchers, and I think probably frustration with lots of ministers as well, that at the first sign of trouble, people are just immediately pushing for these really draconian restrictions. If you go back 18 months and talked about the idea of lockdown or even forcing people to wear masks or work from home, you know, this would be seen as a total encroachment of the state onto individual liberties. The last 18 months has obviously sort of changed the equation there. But given we do have a vaccine that works, there is an alternative.
Yeah.
I think everyone would far prefer us as a country to pull together again and make a success of that, rather than reach for these kind of far more draconian and far more intrusive measures.
Yes. Oh, I think there's definitely a different attitude, I think, as well, with people certainly getting in touch with us today here at Talk Radio saying, you know, we won't do it. You know, if they try and make us do another lockdown for Christmas, you know, we're not doing it because they've had enough, basically. And my sense is I don't think the government wants to do that.
The government does not want another lockdown, right? And interestingly, I mean, we've got so used to sort of lockdowns like ruled out, then eventually brought in, that we're probably a bit jaded when we talk about that.
Right.
But it's important to remember that when they dropped a lot of this legislation a little while ago, they need to re-legislate to bring in a lockdown. So it is not as simple as just pressing the button anymore. They would have to go back to Parliament, have a discussion, have a vote. Right. So at least you have that sort of safeguard again.
Yes, because that was a sort of strange happening this week, wasn't it? When they were due to vote on the extension of the Coronavirus Emergency Powers Act, and then they kind of just decided not to bother having the vote. And I was talking about it the following day with people, and nobody was quite sure whether that meant that because they haven't been renewed, they now no longer exist, or because they haven't been renewed, they're just going to sort of peter out.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the... I'd have to go back and remember the details, but I think a lot of the guts of that legislation have been pulled out by the government.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, they pulled quite a lot of the
stuff. So it doesn't do what it used to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely pulled about three of the main sort of hard line, what you might call hard line things out of it. So, but it's just nobody's quite sure really where we are. But what was your sense, Kate, yesterday? I mean, obviously you're in and out of Downing Street all the time, and you have an ability, I presume, to sort of, you know, catch the mood, if you like. What was the mood and what is the mood inside there?
I thought that actually Sajid was very sort of, I don't want to say he was gloomy because he was also hopeful that we could pull together and make a success of the boosters. But I think Sajid had some harsh words for the country. He's sort of putting us on notice, isn't he?
Yes.
But if we don't hurry up, pull together like we did earlier this year, get the vaccine, make a success of it, then we could see more measures introduced this winter. Mm. And I think it's, we've seen them do this before when they sort of give you there's a sort of fork in the road.
Mm.
And I don't want to say he's trying to scare the country into having a jab, but they're certainly trying to cajole, trying to give you a sort of rude awakening into getting the jab. And I think that that's probably quite important because, you know, the rates are pretty bad.
Yeah.
We've gone from being the fastest vaccinating country in the world, pretty much, to not being one. Immunity is waning. And right. I just think that obviously it can be a bit of a hassle sometimes to sort of go to the doctor, book in, but we have to remember that just what freedom the jab has given us.
Well, that's true, but I mean, it didn't give it to us for a long time. And you know, we were told at the beginning that it would give us complete and utter freedom. And in fact, it was the way out of everything. But when people were double jabbed, they still couldn't really go anywhere for quite a long time. You know, it's a bit better now. Mm. But the other worry I've got is that if this kind of continual, because the testing regimen is still very, very high in this country, much more so than anywhere else. And there may well be just as many infected people who would test positive in France if they were tested. But, you know, they're not testing them the same way we are. So I worry that somehow, you know, Boris will talk our way into another kind of, you know, pariah state where everybody around the world says, oh, we can't have anyone from Britain coming because, you know, I want to go to America for Christmas. And I've already, you know, sorted it out. I don't want to be like, you know, sitting here going, I can't go.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think that the thing to remember is that while the case rates can be very scary and high, the thing to really watch out for is hospitalisation and death rates.
Yes, and those are very low, aren't they?
Exactly. Well, yeah, but they are creeping up. But if you do take the sting out of COVID by making it a disease that you sort of like live with, can make you a bit poorly, but doesn't kill you, doesn't put you in hospital, then there's no major problem with those high case rates. But you're right about the testing as well. You know, half term's coming up, you will see testing go down because pupils are tested when they go to school.
Right.
So,
and that was
know,
meant
that
to come to an end, wasn't it? I mean, I know my own kids' school was supposed to be reviewing at the end of September whether they were going to continue with testing. And I haven't heard what the end of result of that was.
I mean, almost certainly they will continue, right? What is clear is that they were contemplating sort of reining, scaling back the testing a lot, probably to cut costs. There was talk about introducing charging. All that has been dropped, at least for the winter. Mm. In fact, Sajid last night, desperately pleading with Brits to voluntarily test themselves, you know, twice a week with these lateral flow tests you get from the NHS. So clearly they are worried and clearly they're hoping these sort of less intrusive measures, if taken up a bit more widely, can crack down on the disease early enough.
Yeah. And it's been a quite strange week, I imagine, for everyone in the parliamentary world because of what happened last Friday and the murder of Sir David Amis. What's it been like for you, you know, talking to a lot of the MPs? They were obviously quite shocked and shaken by what happened. And obviously we've seen Priti Patel talking about getting more protections for them. I mean, most MPs I talk to say, well, we can't really see the point of having sort of round-the-clock bodyguards. It doesn't really work. So I don't really see that changing, do you?
No, I think, so to talk about the mood at first, I was here on Friday when that happened. Obviously, the mood has been horrible because of that. Mm. A real shock. And actually, what's quite depressing is when you write the story or talk to people, and you can see that this happens about once every 5 years now, an MP dies or nearly dies because they've been attacked, usually on a Friday constituency surgery. Mm. Happened to Sir David. It's what happened to Joe Cox. Before that, Stephen Timms had been attacked. There's a depressing pattern to it, I suppose, of extremists, swooping on the availability of a local MP to inflict them harm. I think that was obviously it was incredibly shocking for everybody here. Sir David was like a hugely popular politician, had served the people of Essex in two different constituencies for 40 years, hugely well-liked by Tory MPs, by Labour MPs. No one had a bad word to say about him. It sounds a bit trite saying that about someone after they've passed away, but genuinely true. And yeah. I think if anybody saw those tributes in the Commons, you would have got a sense of like the humour and the sort of charm of the man, which I thought was like quite poignant and lovely. In terms of looking at how MPs are feeling about their own safety and what can be done about that. Look, I think whenever you have an incident like that, you had the same with Joe Cox, suddenly MPs think, gosh, we're targets too. Mm. On some level, they know that all the time, but this time it sort of really hits home. What can then be done by their safety? Well, MPs highly regard their availability to constituents.
Yeah.
They love being constituency MPs. They like getting out into the local community, speaking to people. They don't want a wall of steel around them. So there's going to be, I think, a practical problem about, well, what extra security can you give them? And a reluctance, I think, for them not to be available. Mm. You might see a few things, like you might see some MPs maybe ask for some police presence on those Friday surgeries, particularly if they're not pre-booked. You're going to see more MPs probably making sure that who they see on the Friday surgeries have to go through a sort of booking process so that you're not having people just sort of turn up on the door. But, you know, David did that and it didn't save him. So it is hard to know what can be done.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And finally, Kate, this weekend, it's always interesting to see what the Sunday papers get up to. There'll be all sorts of briefings going on, no doubt, tomorrow. Are we in a kind of a holding pattern, do you think, in terms of what's going to come out over the next week or so? Is it just keeping an eye on the numbers to see what they're going to react to and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're going to see probably more coming out of the government in terms of trying to encourage and cajole people to get the jab. I think they'll see where that lands. You've got to give that time to yield results. And then in terms of the Sunday papers, we've got the budget next week, which, I mean, we're a bit broke, but the budget's always a big story. So I think they're going to be sniffing around to see what Rishi's going to be doing in that budget. I imagine Rishi, the spending envelope is pretty tight. I think Rishi will be focusing on what tweaks can the state do to try and lever sort of private investment into the country, increase our productivity without spending billions on unproven projects. So yeah. I think that'll be sort of where we end up.
Yeah, I think that's right. Kate, good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Kate Ferguson, Deputy Political Editor at The Sun, who was at the briefing yesterday, of course, telling us about the mood in Downing Street. Sajid Javid, quite gloomy, she said, but also kind of partly hopeful that it won't get any worse. And it doesn't need to get any worse. I think that is the point. My question of what is it that they are up to is still an interesting one. It still hangs in the air because I don't even know for sure if the government know what they're up to. The sense is that they certainly don't want to have a lockdown. But, of course, we know we've been there before. That doesn't mean they won't. I really don't think anyone would pay attention to it, though, would they?
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.